The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
A few years ago, I didn't know much about autism beyond the stereotypes. You know the stereotypes: a young, straight, white boy who has trouble communicating. And you can see already in this service that those stereotypes don't begin to capture what autism is really like. A few years ago, my friend opened my eyes by saying he was autistic. I had known him for years, and I never would have guessed. It turns out it was a recent discovery for him in his 30s. That's a common experience. Many people on the autism spectrum get really good at masking. Masking means they know how society expects them to talk and act, and they consciously adapt, even when it doesn't feel natural and takes a lot of mental energy. If you think about other identities, it isn't the same as code switching or passing, but it's closely related. The thing that struck me was his reaction to discovering that he was autistic. This wasn't an illness that he was managing. It wasn't something he was ashamed of. It was his identity. He was proudly living into it. And discovering that identity was empowering. He said that it was like his whole life finally made sense. So he wanted to talk about his experiences to me so that if other people resonated, they could test themselves and possibly learn something new about their identity. That included me. One of the reasons he thought that I might be on spectrum is because we communicated well together. One of the stereotypes about people with autism is that they struggle to communicate or empathize, but that's not true. It would be more fair to say that neurotypical people, people like me who don't have autism, ADHD, or a couple of other things, it would be more fair to say that neurotypical people and autistic people often have trouble empathizing and communicating with each other. One of the studies that showed that involved a game of telephone. You know, the game where a bunch of people sit in a circle, try to pass a message from the start to the end. You might start with, "Love is the spirit of this church," and you might end with, "I'd love to drink spirits under the birch." The study had one group that was neurotypical people, and they did fine. One group was a mix of neurotypical people and autistic people, and they had a lot of challenges. But here's the key point. There was also a group that was just autistic people, and they did just as well as the neurotypical group. People with autism and people without autism communicate just as well as each other. The challenge is when people with autism and neurotypical people are communicating together. And remember, people with autism are already doing a lot of masking. They're already doing a lot of work to meet people like me halfway. For me, as somebody without autism, someone who's part of the dominant culture, for me to live into my values, to celebrate each person's own unique identity and spiritual journey, to live into our interconnection across differences, that means that I need to be a better communicator and meet them halfway too. The reason he thought that we communicated well together is because I put a lot of intention into my communication. And I think that makes me a better communicator across the board, at work, when giving talks, everywhere. One of my biggest communication skills is trying to notice misunderstandings, It's normal for people to talk and assume that everyone's on the same page. Maybe somebody notices some small differences, but they assume that it's not meaningful. A lot of the time it is. I'm often the person in a meeting who will ask a seemingly obvious question just to try to make sure that everybody is on the same page. Another communication skill is trying to be clear. Sometimes someone asks me a question, I might be tempted to just give a one-word answer, but that would leave a lot of ambiguity, so I suppress my inner teenager, and instead I share some context to give a more full answer. Or if someone asks a question and I don't understand why, I try to understand and empathize with them, instead of rushing in and giving an incomplete answer. My last communication tip is to assume good intent. It's very common and normal to assume that when someone is asking a lot of questions or responding in an atypical way, that they're intentionally being difficult, but it might just be that their brain works differently than yours. These communication tips, paying attention to misunderstandings, trying to be clear, assuming good intent, they might seem small, but they can be hard to put into practice, especially when things feel tense or rushed. I'll give you all a brief minute of silence to think about a miscommunication that you've had or that you've seen. Try to reframe any blame or any assumptions. Try to think about the interconnection between everyone involved. And think about what you might have done differently. I won't ask you to share, this is just for you, but let's take a moment to reflect. Thank you for taking the time to think about communication. I mentioned that my friend thought I might be autistic because the two of us communicated well together. I'm not proud to admit it, but it was hard for me to hear that. Sure, if he was autistic, I would be supportive of him, but me? I'm empathetic, I'm a good communicator, I'm normal. I had internalized all of that stigma that I was mentioning about autism, and all of that came from the dominant culture, and it felt like a challenge to my identity to hear that I might be on the spectrum myself. And I mention it because I had to admit to myself, and I had to let that stigma go before I could move forward and actually engage with my friend's suggestion. If we hold on to things like stigma and shame, it can keep us from understanding ourselves. So I thought about myself. Autism is a spectrum, which means that different people with autism can relate to that identity in a bunch of different ways. So maybe autism just showed up differently for me than how I was imagining it. John Marble, the founder of Pivot Neurodiversity, compares the spectrum to being French. He says there's millions of different ways to be French, and a gay fashion designer in Paris and a Catholic nun in Bordeaux are going to be radically different, but they still understand each other as French. We might think of autistic people with higher support needs, such as nonverbal autistic people, as being more autistic, but as Tad mentioned in his reflection, talking about more or less is a mistake. That's how we talk about illness, and autism isn't an illness, it's an identity. Much of the research that I did for this service came from a book called We're Not Broken by Eric Garcia, an autistic journalist who compiled stories of people across the autism spectrum. He has lower support needs, but when he saw someone with higher support needs, he felt a connection. He writes, Mel Baggs couldn't speak, but used their body to communicate. And seeing this, I felt chills. I felt as if I had been an immigrant in a foreign country my whole life, and I just heard someone speak my native tongue. So since autism shows up differently for different people, I thought about some of the parts that I could relate to. I'm a little quiet or shy or introverted, and some of how I process my emotions feels like it might be different than other people. And as you can see from the people up here today, that doesn't necessarily describe all people with autism, not exactly, but often people with autism can feel like they're on the outside looking in at social groups because of challenges communicating with neurotypical people. As early as elementary school, I got good grades, but one thing my teachers put on my report card is that I could be a little hyperactive or fidgety, and that's still true. I often have something in my hands, something that I'm playing around with, and many people with autism will stim as a form of emotional self-regulation. Stimming is usually a simple, repetitive behavior that might subconsciously comfort you. But it can be a challenge too, because neurotypical people often don't understand it and overreact, particularly when the person stimming is a person of color. A lot of people with autism don't drive a car, and I don't either. For many people with autism, this has to do with sensory processing. It can be hard to quickly figure out whether the driver next to you is paying attention or if they're going to break the law or do something hazardous. Some people with autism have challenges with executive functioning. I'll often procrastinate on household chores. I might not start an important task until right before a deadline. And one related thing is hyperfixation, which Tad talked about. And that was with his knowledge of movies, and I'm not that way with movies specifically, but sometimes I'll be so engrossed in a project or a game or a book that I'll forget to eat until I realize I'm hungry. So I took my friend's advice. I took an autism self-test. Self-testing is pretty common in the autism community. There's a bunch of tests online where you answer some questions, and it says if you're likely to be on the spectrum or not. The test I took said that I wasn't autistic, but taking it was still a good experience. It helped me better empathize with people with autism, and helped me better understand myself. Now again, I'd like to give you all a minute to think about your own internal mental state. This isn't about a diagnosis. Remember that autism is an identity, not an illness. And each of us can learn from other identities in our own unique ways. What stigma or shame do you have about your own identities? And what would it look like to let go of some of that? What are some of the people you feel most connected to, people you can most relate to? And what's special about your connection with them? And when is that connection missing? When does your focus serve you well, and when does it lead you astray? And when things are too much, how do you deal with it? I'll give you a few more moments to reflect. Thank you for taking the time to reflect. Since my friend told me about his experiences, I started learning more about autism. I started noticing it in a lot of places and a lot of people. I've had times in Sunday school where a kid will respond very literally, and the teachers will assume they're intentionally misunderstanding the question. But when I would try reframing things, it was clear that they really wanted to engage. They just weren't understanding. I've also seen it with adults when talking about social justice issues. A facilitator might use metaphorical language, and when a participant responds literally or asks follow-up questions, the facilitator might assume they're embodying white supremacy culture or being overly perfectionist, or that they don't actually care, even when they're just trying to engage. When I've spoken with friends on the spectrum, they've said that situations like those are pretty common. They've said that they've had those experiences themselves. And it's not great when we as a community are talking about social justice, but when someone tries to engage, we act like they're the enemy, just because they process information in a different way. It's not great when we think of a kid as a smart aleck just because they process information in a different way. And the reason that I've been learning more about autism myself is I want to do better. In the disability rights community, there's something called the social model of disability. The idea is that whether something is a disability isn't an objective fact of nature. It has to do with who we are as a society. You can think of eyesight. I'm extremely nearsighted, and without my glasses, I think I can tell Million Tad apart, but I'd have to squint and it'd be a stretch. But because I live in a society where I can get glasses, there's nothing I can't do because of my vision. So we don't think of people with eyesight like mine as having a disability. Whether or not it's a disability depends on who we are as a society. A lot of time, society says that autistic people have to do all the work themselves to adapt to neurotypical norms. Sarah Gardner, the director of Neurodiversity Navigators, says a lot of other programs are trying to turn autistic students into humans, rather than starting from the premise that they already are. But the silver lining, the positive thing about the social model of disability, is that it means we have a lot of power. We can start from the premise that all human beings have dignity and that we should all work to communicate better with each other. We can think about ourselves and how we process information and how we connect with others. We can educate ourselves We can welcome and celebrate people with autism. We can tell stories of autistic people, let them tell their own stories, make sure they have space to be themselves. We can recognize that autism is an identity, not an illness, and we can be a safe space to explore that identity, how it connects to spirituality, to relationships, to the human condition. I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything that we need to do, but I think that these questions are worth asking and struggling with and living into. Thank you all for living into these questions with me. Blessed be.
I want to preface my reflection with a slight trigger warning. I have what used to be known as Asperger's syndrome. I know that Asperger's is not the appropriate term to use anymore, but I prefer it because it feels more accurate for me. But I understand that not everyone likes or uses that term. One thing that doesn't get talked about much when it comes to Asperger's is that it is in many ways an invisible disorder. For me especially, because mine shows up as relatively mild, I'm able to go about my day without anyone knowing I have it. Indeed, I have many friends who don't even know that I have Asperger's because I don't present that way. And I'm sure some of you in this congregation are surprised to find that out as well. Surprise. And sometimes I admit I have some shame around that. Shame that I don't fit in the autism community because mine is so mild as to be unnoticeable. I even question whether or not it was appropriate for me to share a reflection during this service. Shouldn't I let someone else who is more autistic than me speak? Am I really the best person to speak on life on the spectrum, considering I'm barely on the spectrum myself? And yet, my life is impacted every single day by Asperger's. It affects how I interact with people. It affects my ability to do things. It affects how I process and receive information. So in that sense, I am the perfect person to speak on it because I am impacted by it just as much as someone who has a more severe form of it. There are less than ideal things about having Asperger's. For example, I don't pick up on social cues very well, so I can at times be awkward in social settings or say things that perhaps shouldn't be said in public. And sometimes I have felt left out of social events or gatherings because of this. I struggle to relate to people emotionally and can sometimes come off as a bit closed off or distant. I'm very friendly, I promise. It's just the Asperger's that makes me seem that way. I really am friendly. But now I want to focus on a positive aspect of it. People with Asperger's syndrome tend to hyperfixate on one thing, and that becomes their obsession and the one thing that they know really, really well. For me, that thing is movies. I watch a lot of movies. I can tell you anything you could ever want to know about movies, how they're made, how they get distributed, who made them and why, and who stars in them. I like to joke that my entire personality revolves around movies, which isn't that far from the truth, really. My friends know me as their go-to person for all things movie-related, and it has become a huge part of my identity. And that's entirely because of the Asperger's. So while there are some things about it that are less than ideal, overall, I'm actually grateful that I have it, as it has enriched my life in many ways. I don't see it as a disease or a disability, and I'm learning how to see it as empowering, not disempowering. There is nothing to be ashamed of. I'm learning to embrace that truth about myself.
the names of that which each of us holds sacred, please join me in the spirit of meditation and prayer. With compassion, solidarity, and resolve, may we take action to reduce great suffering, genocide, war, displacement and unwanted migration, hunger, a lack of housing or access to life-saving medical care, poverty, and the desperation and hopelessness that often accompany it. And yet may we also remember among us those we are much more likely to encounter in our daily lives, whose struggles may be less obvious or severe, yet are painful nonetheless. People with unusual emotional needs and responses, people who may think or talk or listen in ways foreign and thus frustrating to others. People who give a literal response or a lengthy explanation to a purely rhetorical question, a criticism, or a polite platitude like, "How are you?" Who have no grasp of small talk, who are honest and direct and confused when others aren't. People who have uncomfortable sensitivities to sounds, textures, or smells, who are easily overwhelmed by too many inputs. People who are focused intently on one subject. Those who find changing their routines to be a source of extreme stress. People who ask lots of questions about things others think are clear or obvious, who don't recognize subtle nonverbal cues telling them to shut up. People who are clumsy and uncoordinated, those who fidget and don't look straight at others while they are talking. People for whom standard advice about changing their reactions doesn't work, no matter how hard they try to do it. People who are eccentric in their appearance and mannerisms, who march to an unseen drummer no one else hears. Yes, people who don't meet the standards of capitalist productivity, by which most of us, whether we realize it or not, use to judge the attitudes, abilities, and ultimate worth of others. People far too often wrongfully condemned as naive, antisocial, individualistic, manipulative, self-centering, lazy, lacking empathy, or motivated by a horrendous sense of entitlement to nonconformity. May we then resolve to see the truth that we each strive in our own ways to fit into a society not designed for the well-being of any of us, yet alone for those hardwired to be literal thinkers, socially awkward, unusually sensitive, and passionately focused. Autistic and other neurodiverse people have struggled too long to overcome the self-righteous assumptions and demands for conformity demanded by the neurotypical majority to alleviate its discomfort with difference. May we, people like myself and Tad, whose reflection mirrors my own life experience, although identified much later in life, continue to find welcome here as equal partners, valued for our differing perspectives and honored for our resilience. This is our home. May it be so for all of us. Amen.